collaborating with James County staff and other people built the pseudopod, and they built the C-1000 terminator. So those two films in particular gave the business momentum that it never had before. It was always trying to convince the powers that be at ILM to consider using these tools. And even when I was working at Robert Abel Associates in the mid-80s, and like trying to convince people to use computer graphics even for advertising is a very difficult thing. And in motion pictures, it was impossible. Because Tron, which was the film back at that time, to use computer graphics. The movie really sort of failed commercially. And then the company I was working at, Robert Abel, we were hired to do Vex for Star Trek picture for Paramount under Jeffrey Katzenberg. And we worked for a long, long time, and eventually Bob and Jeffrey got into a fight, and we got fired, and we also did some with more known techniques at the time. So the evolution of computer graphics actually to get to a point where, you know, using the computer tool in film took a long time, but once it caught hold, you know, once Terminator 2 came out, and then once Spaz and a group of people built the T-Rex, even at the time of the building the T-Rex, there were so many naysayers, you can never do a computer feature in digital technology to help, you know, in this particular context, so it's completely doable. As a matter of fact, the T-Rex was actually built sort of clandestinely, as some people know, in the pit, which you guys have all visited, which is Spaz and Mark's lair, which is underneath the surface here of
the flavors in front of the door.
And they basically, when they were working on Ubis, they were working on T2, and when they were working on T-Rex, they pretty much lived there all the time, to just get this work done, because it was so difficult. And there wasn't a lot of money to fund the development of the building of these creatures, because people didn't believe it. Steven Spielberg and Kathy Kennedy and people at ILM didn't believe it was actually done. And oftentimes in Hollywood, it's the case, just the same case with Spawn. And the development of Spawn, people won't believe what you say, because people say things all the time, and all how people hustling and selling and getting these kind of different projects made. But very often do people actually come through with what they promise. And so no one's going to believe you, but if you tell them until the time has come that you can animate a Tyrannosaurus Rex and make people believe in the audience, so you show Steven Spielberg that you can actually do it. James Cameron, on the other hand, had a real vision about what the T-1000 looked like, and what the pseudopod character looked like in the Abyss. He was really a springboard to really propelling Industrial Light and Magic and other people working in digital technology to the point where they were able to get to a tool where the technology had developed enough so that the T-Rex came on. And the T-Rex was really the character that let the world know that the brains of America, as opposed to the beauty of America, could be used as a way to make hordes of money. And that's really what it's about. And that just leads me to one little thing that I'm going to say. There's a wonderful article in David Wright that you should all read. It's called Stars Push Kick Perks. And it's all about stars asking for certain perks in their contracts, like they need their own, they need their 12 assistants, and they need someone to do something special with their makeup. And one gentleman says right there, had his trailer shipped to Paris, for a movie he actually ended up not doing, and the trailer had to ship back. Well, the Spawn crew worked in a trailer, and they live in a trailer. And the trailer has no bathroom and has no shower. It just happens to be the situation that we're in. So, and it's true, you guys will go see the trailer that they work in later on. I think it's really important to point out that their contribution to motion pictures is equally, if not more significant, in my opinion, than spending $20 million a star. Now, the work we do is not cheap. It is expensive, but we don't live the life that John Travolta leads. We don't live the life that Nicolas Cage leads. But our contribution to motion pictures can be as significant, if not more significant, than a star's contribution. And the other thing that's so funny about this thing, they call these people out from studios, and no one's willing to comment. No one's willing to say for the record what their feelings are about it. No one will say anything bad about a star in Hollywood. No one will say something on the record about John Travolta, because if you're a producer in Hollywood and you don't have access to John Travolta, then you can't make movies, because movies get made in Hollywood for just a few reasons. And typically at the studios get reasons. The reason why a movie gets made is because a star will commit to the picture, the star stuff. Well, New Line's a little different. New Line's not a major studio, but they are making major movies, which is very it's not considered a major, major, you know, although they're starting to get to that. They're definitely as close to that as anyone is. As anyone. I mean, I think in this year's box office, they're actually above a few of the majors already. I hope this is fine. But this picture was greenlit not based on stars or on cast. This picture was greenlit because of these guys here. Because these guys have a tool and have the skills as filmmakers and storytellers to entertain the mass audience. So you can have great stars, and you can have great effects, and you can have a really bad movie, and you can have a great effect and a bad movie, and you have great stars and a bad movie. But you can also have a great movie that a lot of people will go see with just great effects and great actors who are not stars. And in our movies, we have great effects, and the effects are unlike anything anybody's ever seen before. And you're going to see some stuff today that will prove that. And I'm going to show you some other things that you'll see that people are going to start seeing later that's really going to blow people away.
Question.
Yes.
Going back to there. We were talking about T-Rex. Which film?
Jurassic Park. Okay. Transformers. Yeah. Sometimes I speak a little fast, and I won't slow down, but I'll answer questions later. But someone help me where I was. In our movie, we have two people who are great actors and may become stars. And one of them is Michael Jai White, and he's an African American, and he's a star of Spawn. He actually didn't see his picture in the States in the trailer, but we'll see it soon. But he starts out in this movie as this guy all finishes and killed by his own, and he goes to a place called Hell, which we're now calling Darkland, for reasons we can talk about later. And he comes back and he's reincarnated as this dark hero called Spawn. And the story of Spawn is the story of this man's soul. And this man chooses to not avenge his murder, and the movie chooses good over evil. And that's the heart of the movie that we're telling. And the interesting thing, and the wonderful thing about Spawn, and the wonderful thing about Michael Jai White, is the role that Michael plays at the end of the movie is a positive role model for African Americans. And it is the first time that an African American has been portrayed as a superhero in an extremely positive light. And people who have seen the preview of this movie, young African Americans and old, are writing on their cards, thank you for finally portraying an African American in a positive light. And I think it's a really good thing. And it's something that I was not always, back in December when I first saw the film with Spawn, I was just worried that I didn't want to be embarrassed about the movie. Because again, you know, this is our first movie. We've never made a movie before as a producer and a director and my producing partner, staff. So we had responsibilities that we've never had before, and I was nervous quite often. But now I'm confident that we've made a very good picture that just keeps getting better and better and better. You might keep letting us do more and more things as the days go on. We have one other star in the movie, and the beauty of John is that he doesn't overwhelm Michael's performance. Michael, when people leave the audience, Michael still is the person that they like the most. But John's performance as a clown is he plays our villain, and his performance is much, much better than Jeffrey's performance. And John was on with, he's an amazing performer. Stick around. This performance freaked right now in San Francisco, which has been selling out over and over and over and over and over. Which is going to New York where I have to spawn releases and on the first. But John Leguizamo's performance, in my opinion, as a Latino actor, this type of performance is by far the best performance that I think anybody will have ever seen in a long, long time. I think when you see the movie and when you see this just a little piece of film that I'm going to show you today, so I'll stop there. The first thing we're going to show is what we call the SIGGRAPH presentation reel. Actually, this reel didn't make it to SIGGRAPH. It didn't get chosen because we weren't as completed as we should have been when we needed to be. Which is just a lot about, we didn't have the faculties available to us like some of the other projects do at ILM or just, we had much, 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 much less money than any of the other summer day pictures. And I think we made a picture that's better than any of them. I think I'm in a picture that also will, the public will respond.
What does that mean, much less money? How much?
Depends on what picture you choose, you know. So if you pick Titanic or a Batman, then you've made 25%. If you pick Speed, it's a third. If you pick Lost World, because Steven is an amazing, efficient filmmaker, it happens. But that's only because Steven is so, well, two reasons. One, Stephen doesn't take a salary. So Stephen's fees are not included in the production of the movie. So Stephen doesn't take his, Stephen as a director, if he had to be fees, you know, somewhere between $10,000. So Stephen doesn't take a fee, gets for the point. That's the deal. And Stephen publicly talks about it in the premiere. Stephen is also very happy to talk about actors who take these exorbitant fees. And he says in that issue of Premiere when he's on the cover, and even in Time Magazine, he says, go to hell, actors. Don't take your feet. Take a risk on the movie. Trust yourself. Trust your own instincts, you know. Don't take your feet. Do what I'm doing. And because Stephen's so powerful, these people will watch. Yeah.
Well, what was your production budget?
We started out at less than $40 million. And we are around $45 million. So I don't think that New Line wants me to talk about that, but I mean it's the truth. We made the movie. We made a summer blockbuster for that amount of money. We have no are above the line. I mean Arnold, the above the line fees on Batman and Robin are more than our entire production budget. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Joel Schumacher, Alicia Silverstone, George Clooney, their fees alone are significantly more than what it took to make our entire money. And I think our movie is tons of stuff. And I think it's new. I mean, the best thing we have going forward is new. It's different. You know, it's a little more harder to edge. You know, the kids are going to like it so much. I mean, you go to Batman, it's like, I mean, it's nice, it's beautiful, but where's the heart of Batman? Where's the soul of the character? And Spawn, the soul of the character is there from the beginning to the end. And that's what makes Spawn a phenomenon. And it's, I'm preaching the gospel here, but the picture speaks for itself. And people have seen the picture, and they're pulling out the cards. They're telling it like it is. So it's nice to be able to get up here and have this confidence about the movie that I have, that the movie works. So when we first started on Spawn, we got invited through by New Line in April of 1996. There were 77 budget and effects shots, 56 of which I own was doing, and 20, whatever the difference is, 22 of which a company called Bam from the Ranch Entertainment is doing, which is the company named after Spaz and my other partner Mark, who were Bam from the Ranch. And those two guys are truly the digital bad boys. I think Spaz has been suspended from ILM three times. And banned one. I was suspended once from ILM, and Mark said was banned from the ranch once, but he was smart enough and never.
Why?
Why the banning or why the suspension?
Why were y'all banned?
The ban from the ranch had to do with a party that was thrown at Lucas Ranch and Cynthia Leary. He spoke here at ILM, and Mark Capay brought them down, their friends, they were friends, probably four friends, some of those friends. And they had a party, and Mark and Spaz were wandering around the upstairs part of the ranch where they weren't supposed to be, and they got caught. And they gave pseudonyms, and that's why they got in trouble, and they couldn't go to the ranch for a year. And then, of course, we all have. So, and before you leave, you got to go see where they work in the city. I highly recommend it. Anyway, we had a couple of important points. We had 77 visual effects shots. In the motion picture now, there are 375 visual effects shots that are being done by 21 different companies around the world. There are two companies working on the movie in Tokyo. There's one company in Hong Kong. There's one company in Toronto. One company in Vancouver. Five companies in the Bay Area, one company in Santa Barbara, and seven companies in Los Angeles, and one in London. Gabriel is doing work for us. I mean, the great thing about it is all these people who left ILM are actually still working for us on Spawn, all of our friends, like Jay. We were trying to get Jay to work on Spawn for a long time, and we didn't know what company he was going to be at. Eventually, he landed at a company called Cinesite, which is a division of Eastman Kodak. And they said they couldn't do anything, but then they found that the division in London could do things, so Jay is flying back and forth. In London, he's actually brought a piece of film for us to look at today. So if you guys want to miss part of your lunch, you can actually, no, you don't want to see it yet? Not really. But anyway, if you want to, we're going to have a little review of this shot when we're done. So we went from 70 effect shots to almost more effect shots than what a major Hollywood picture would have. 375 for the amount of money we spent on the movie overall. It's very, very unheard of. In today's day and age. And I think we were able to do that because we were smart about how we went about getting the work done, one, and two, because I think a lot of people who are working on this movie really respect the fact that for the first time, with the exception of John Lasseter at Pixar, people who were involved in the creation of these tools to make a lot of other people a lot of money actually for the first time got to make a movie themselves. Now, are we making a lot of money on Swan? Which probably sure you would have. Actually not. The deal for Swan was actually made in 93. So, and as a first-time filmmaker, as you may or may not know, you don't get rich on your first film at all. But if someone's successful, yes, there are other opportunities for us. But John Lasseter was really the first person who was able to make a digital film coming from the digital realm. And Faz, Mark, and I are really the first people who have made a live action film in a sort of Hollywood. I'm sure there's some other films I'm not aware of. But we're really at the head of the first wave of what I hope will be other opportunities for filmmakers of this type who are also storytellers to have opportunities to tell films. This is a really interesting thing that I'll try to explain as simply as I possibly can. But directors and the actual people who make the film versus sometimes the people whose names are on the film have come out of a lot of different disciplines. Primarily in Hollywood, they oftentimes come out of the cinematography area or commercial filmmakers, like commercial TV filmmakers like Ridley Scott, Adrian Lyne, or Joel Schumacher. They come out of, costume designer, they come out of those disciplines. They have rarely, because it hasn't been, they have rarely come out of the old school visual effects area, like the camera people. If you look at all of Island's credits, you'll notice up until present day, all those credits are, every credit on that list, even Forrest Gump, they're all headed up by what were camera people. Well, all the visual effects supervisors of ILM today, and all the new visual effects supervisors in the world are no longer come from, now, Habib Zarkapur and Jay Riddle both come from camera backgrounds, but they're also computer science. So, it's this new breed of filmmaker who is, and Mark DePay and Spaz are at the very, very leading edge of that. And I think what we'll see is, and hopefully what we'll see more of, getting back to this sort of idea, this little battle between actors and effects, is that there will be more opportunities for people like these guys here to make movies. And the more opportunities people like this get to make movies, the less, because they're smarter, the less they have to rely on the traditional Hollywood system to make their films. For example, they can use digital concepts, they can use digital actors. We could have made this film, but there wasn't enough money available. We could make the next Spawn in Darkland, in Hell. We have about 4 minutes in the movie in Hell. But we can make the next film, we could theoretically make the sequel to Spawn without using any actors. And Martin Spavin, it's nothing against actors. I mean, I'm sure we'll have actors involved, but we have the ability to do it. And I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just another way of making movies. When we were shooting Missile Photography, and as first-time filmmakers in Hollywood on a blockbuster picture, things can be very difficult. And I came up with an idea we had 70 days of essentially sketching the Spawn, which wasn't enough, nowhere near enough, to do what we wanted to do. And I suggested pretty vehemently, against everyone's interest, that we reduce the number of city days from 70 to 68, and drop 7 days from 70. And the reason why I wanted to do that was because I wanted to raise money out of our own budget to pay for our digital health. When the script was approved, the final battle sequence took place in the Canyon Living Room we were looking at there. Neither myself or Mark or Stav felt that that was a worthy ending of Spawn, especially given the fact that we consider ourselves a new breed of filmmakers, digital filmmakers, and even using our technology in an environment that's just normal was born. So we raised, out of our own budget, about $1.1 million to create this digital file. We hired a company called Santa Barbara Studios to do it. When we cut the sequence together, it was only about a minute and a half. We didn't get off long enough, so we doubled it. And Michael Luca at New Line, I'll talk about him in just a sec, allowed us to double the length of the sequence. And we have raised about another $500,000, so we ended up being about $1.6 million. And there's two sequences in the movie in the beginning, and there's a third sequence later on. And it's about 4 minutes of running time total. I'm going to show you one shot from that today. I just want to mention, two other people. One is Todd McFarlane, and one is Michael DeLuca. Michael DeLuca is the president of New Line Cinema. Todd McFarlane, as you know. I think in the traditional studio system, no one would have ever let us make this movie. Two people, and only two people, really took the risk. One was Todd, and one was Mike. Todd took the risk because he believed that the people in trenches have as much skill as the people who somehow have risen to the top in other ways, and he was willing to take a chance with a group of people who were his peers and who he believed had the talent to bring to him. And he was willing to trust us completely with his project. And it was a huge risk for him. Everybody in Hollywood told him not to do it, but he did it. He did it against the best interests of his attorney, who was fired because Debbie Klein at the law firm didn't think it was a good idea for us to make this film. She works for the biggest law firm in LA. Paul also fired the agent and other people, but at the end of the day, he believed that he was the people to make the movie. Mike DeLuca and Saz and I worked on The Mask together, which is how I met Mike, and that was a $16 million movie that went on to grow $330 million worldwide. And during that process, I developed a friendship and a relationship with Mike. Mike is also a brilliant, much, much smarter than I will ever be, but he's a smart filmmaker, he understands story. He's also a peer, he's in the same age group as we are, and he trusted Mark and Saz and I to make this film on our own. And without those two people who were in positions of power at a very young age, and much higher position than the three of us were working here at ILM. Working at ILM, we were suppliers to the movie business. Mike DeLuca was a controller of product, president of production at New Line, he's the youngest president of production ever at 28, and he's now 34, 33. Todd McFarlane quit Marvel, told him to go fuck himself because they wouldn't let him have residuals on his comic book property. And then he went and started his own company, Image, with six other comic book companies. They all quit in 1992. They started their own company. So Todd had complete control. Todd is the sole owner, like George Lucas, is the sole owner of this company, of McFarlane Toys, of the comic book franchise, and Todd McFarlane Productions. He's a true maverick. He works out of his house. Everybody works out of the house. Actually, I think they got some other little house, too, so they ran around the state. Those two guys are the reason why we were able to make the movie. They were willing to take a risk. Hollywood's about taking risks. And oftentimes you take risks and you fail. This time I think it's a risk and I think it's the ultimate one. But it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, I got a question.
Sure.
You said that the production budget on Spawn is 45.
Yeah.
Is that the largest that New Line has ever done?
No. On 59. A lot more than that. So was Lost.
Well, how were they able to do the math for only 15?
Well, that was back when New Line wasn't owned by Time Warner and wasn't owned by Turner. And they could make Time Union pictures. And Jim Carrey was less than $500,000. So, like, you know, they made the movie for $10 million. You know, the production budget of the movie was $10 million. The production budget of our movie was $19 million. So, and we have quite a bit more production in the math stuff. Now, our post-production is much, much